All right, now we can start. Hi, everybody. It's good to see you. Happy, I don't know, snowy February morning, whatever. It's like Groundhog Day. It's just the same thing over and over again. But I'm glad you're here. I'm glad we're warm. We can do this. Spring will come. Like Ellen said, we are in the middle of a series called All In From the Beginning. So since the beginning of the year, since the beginning of 2019, we've been having this conversation about what does it mean to go all in on Jesus and the things that he's called us to. Rather than being people who are like loosely affiliated with or occasionally hang out with Jesus, we want to be people who intentionally follow him. And if we're going to intentionally follow Jesus, then we want to do that with our whole being. With our whole lives, not in a compartmentalized way, but that every movement, every action, every choice, every decision in our lives would reflect a commitment to Jesus. So we've been having a conversation over the last few weeks of how does that play out in real life? What does it look like to be someone who's gone all in on Jesus? And so the Bible is full of examples of people that have done this, examples of people that have said, I am committed to God first, and my life kind of waterfalls from that commitment. And so this morning, we're going to look at the life of one of those people. This morning, we are revisiting the Sunday school classic, one of God's top 10 stories, everybody's favorite, Daniel. As in Daniel in the lion's den, Daniel. Okay? So if you've never heard this story, or it's been a while since you like watched Veggie Tales or something that like retells God's stories with vegetables, I don't get it, but it works. People understand that stuff, man. So if it's been a while since you've heard this story, I'm going to tell it to you now. You can find this story in Daniel chapter 6. Here's what it says. Daniel is this really wise, smart guy, and he's known all throughout the kingdom where he's living for his clarity and precision in interpreting the dreams and visions of various kings. He's also known throughout the kingdom as being someone who serves and loves God continually, over and over and over again. Now, Daniel's known as well to have incredible integrity, and he's well-respected. So the king at the time, King Darius, has decided he's going to give Daniel a massive promotion. Daniel is going to be given a ton of authority and power and decision-making capabilities for a particular part of King Darius's kingdom. This is a real bump up for Daniel. Now, Daniel's peers hear about this plan, and they don't like it. They're jealous. And so they try to come up with a way to disqualify Daniel from this job promotion. How can they trap him, if you will? How can they compromise this person who otherwise has airtight integrity? The only way they can come up with it, is to make a fake law. And here's the law that they come up with. For 30 days, no one can worship or pray to any man or god other than King Darius. And if they do, they'll be thrown into a pit of lions, which they just had on hand, you know, should anyone annoy them. They're hungry lions, so, you know, death by lion. So this is the new proclamation. It goes into effect. Daniel hears about this law, this order, promptly goes home to the second floor of his house, to the window that faces Jerusalem, and he prays, not to King Darius, but to the God of Israel. Just like he's done every day, three times a day, for his whole life, Daniel prays to God. Now, these guys who make this fake law know that that's going to happen, so they go to Daniel's house, they witness him praying, and that's it. They've caught him. They run to King Darius and they say, Daniel's broken the law. You have to enforce it. You cannot change your mind. You must hold to your word. King Darius is all upset about this. He loves Daniel. Daniel has a great kind of integrity and image in front of King Darius. But King Darius is kind of pressured in front of these other leaders. And so he says, fine. the order will hold. And as he puts Daniel into the lion's den, he says, may the God whom you continually serve save you. And they close the lid of the lion's den. So the next morning, at the first sign of dawn, King Darius, who's been up all night, all tangled up about this mess, in total distress, he rushes to the lion's den. They open it, and the king says into the pit, Daniel, has the God whom you've continually served been able to save you? And from the pit of the darkness, Daniel says, O king, live forever. My God has sent an angel. He has closed the mouths of lions. They have not hurt me. Pretty extraordinary. The end. That is Daniel in the lion's den. That's pretty extraordinary, right? I mean, it's Sunday school classic. Kids, I mean, you threaten death by lion, and a kid is real engaged real fast, okay? This is an extraordinary story. It's the ultimate all-in example, right? Someone is threatened with death, and they choose God still. It's a really phenomenal example of what it means to follow God and his instruction. But what's true is this is not Daniel's entire life. This is not the first time Daniel goes all in on God, and this is not the first time that God shows up for Daniel. In fact, the lion's den story in Daniel's life shows up in the middle of the book of Daniel. There are five chapters before and five chapters after. Daniel has lived an entire lifespan, entire 50 years before he even gets to the lion's den. When he's in the lion's den, he's close to 80. And then after the lion's den, God uses Daniel to communicate all these words about God's people and his kingdom through dreams and visions. So what's true is the lion's den is just one chapter in Daniel's story. It is an extraordinarily dramatic scene that gets a whole lot of airtime. And often we have this tendency to summarize someone's life with the one moment we see. I've spent the last few weeks reading Michelle Obama's book, Becoming, is that what it's called? Yeah, Becoming. Since reading this book, I refuse to ever limit my description of her as former First Lady Barack Obama's wife. Okay? Because now I've read her story. Here are some bullet points. Michelle Obama is a survivor of the Chicago public school systems and a graduate of Princeton and Harvard Law. Michelle Obama left a prestigious law career to work for various nonprofits, all focused on community health and development in Chicago. Michelle Obama is responsible for pivoting the University of Chicago outward towards the Hyde Park and other surrounding neighborhoods. Michelle Obama has cared for an ailing parent, suffered infertility, and has done the hard work of marriage counseling when her marriage was on the rocks. To limit Michelle Obama's life description to the tenure of her existence as First Lady dismisses the formation of her whole life. To summarize Daniel's life as his 24-hour stay in a lion's den dismisses the formation of his whole life. If we are going to go all in on Jesus and his instruction, we have to acknowledge that it happens through the work of formation. Formation is this slow, very steady, very calibrated work of something being assembled. That's a way that you can think about it. And Daniel's all-in life with God was put together very slowly, moment by moment, choice by choice. Over 50 years, Daniel chose God and God showed up. Daniel chose God and God showed up. Daniel chose God and God showed up. It happened dozens of times before he ever found himself on the edge of a lion's den. You cannot Instapot God's formation. Think that through. I got big feelings about the Instapot. I know it makes your modern life easy. It does not substitute little old lady slow cooking. You cannot Instapot God's formation of your life. This is slow, steady, one moment at a time, each choice matters sort of work. If we only look at one chapter in Daniel's life and then we ask ourselves, would I do that? Would I stand on the edge of a lion's den and say, doesn't matter the law that's in place, I'm going to pray to my God, it doesn't matter what happens. When we only look at that one chapter in isolation, the bar just looks way too high, way too inaccessible, way too complicated. But what's true is that Daniel's whole life lived this narrative of assembly. So that by the time he found himself there, I frankly think it was kind of an easy decision for him. He had done it dozens and dozens of times. And so if we're going to go all in on following Jesus and the things he said, we have to be committed to the formational process of being assembled. And so this morning, we're going to go back to Daniel's life pre the lion's den. And we're going to look at two formational things that happened to Daniel. Two moments where Daniel is being assembled, if you will. Moments where Daniel chooses God and God shows up. These are moments that build up to the lion's den moment. So, before we look at the first moment, you have to understand this about Daniel. This is in the first few verses of the first chapter. Daniel, when we meet him, Daniel chapter 1, verse 1, Daniel is an Israelite, one of God's chosen people, and he lives in Jerusalem. But Jerusalem has been conquered by the Babylonians. And in its conquering of Jerusalem, some of the smartest young men have been taken from Jerusalem and are put to work in the Babylonian court. The idea was, if you conquer a nation, take the best of the best and have them work for you. Kind of an interesting strategy. So Daniel is one of these top of the tops. He's 17. He and a few of his peers are taken to work in the conqueror's court. They're working for the enemy. It's a pretty terrible setup from the beginning. And that's when we meet Daniel. So here's what happens in chapter 1. Daniel and his peers, at the beginning of working in the court, they are told that they can eat the rich food and wine from the king's table. Now, that in and of itself, first move on the new court, makes this really complicated. Because Israelites, God's people, had really strict restrictions on what they could eat as a sign of their dedication to God. And so here Daniel is, and he's being offered this rich food and wine that would, if he ate it, it would compromise his commitment to God. Here's what happens. Daniel 1, chapter 8 through 17. I'm sorry, Daniel 1, verse 8 through 17. But Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine. So he asked the official for permission to not defile himself in that way. Now God had caused the official to show favor and compassion to Daniel. But he said, I'm afraid of my lord the king who's assigned your food and drink. Why should he see you looking worse than the other men your age? The king would then have my head because of you. So Daniel said to the guard, whom the chief had appointed over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, Please test your servant for 7 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink, and then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food, and treat your servants in accordance to what you see. So he agreed to this, and he tests them for 10 days. At the end of the 10 days, they look healthier and better nourished than any other young men who ate the royal food. So the guard takes away their choice food and the wine they were to drink, and he gives them vegetables instead. And to these young four men, God gave knowledge and understanding of all kinds of literature and learning, and Daniel could understand dreams and visions of all kinds. He's 17. It's going to be like 50 more years before the lion's den is ever in question. But in that first verse, in verse 8, it says, Daniel was resolved. He was firmly determined. Daniel was absolutely committed to God. And when things got challenging, Daniel's commitment to God gave him clear thinking. If we are going to follow Jesus and his instruction, we have to be resolved. We have to be firmly committed to Jesus. Are you? Now, this is way more than just signing up to Jesus or showing up here on a Sunday morning or generally understanding the rules of the Bible. Being firmly committed to Jesus means that you live like your commitment to him is permanent, for keeps. You're in it to win it with Jesus. Being firmly committed to Jesus means that your whole life pivots around that commitment. It's different than just liking Jesus or agreeing with Jesus. Imagine, if you will, that you're building a wall out of wood. Now, if you want that wall to hold secure, you've got to nail those pieces of wood together. If you simply take the wood and kind of prop it up one next to each other and you don't nail it together, anytime someone pushes the wall or the wind blows too hard, it's going to completely topple over. If you are not firmly committed to Jesus, anytime life gets really hard or someone pushes too hard, your relationship with him is going to topple over. If you are not firmly committed to Jesus, then when things go less than great, your commitment to him is up for grabs and at risk. Compare it to the commitment of marriage. If a married couple threatens divorce to each other every time there is conflict, pain, or stress, that marriage is continually at risk. And even if they never get divorced, having the topic of divorce on the table corrodes the commitment they've made to each other in marriage. So being firmly committed to Jesus is choosing Jesus regardless of what is happening or how you feel. Being firmly committed to Jesus is committing to living, to loving and listening, worship and trusting and talking to him, regardless of what is happening and how you feel. Being firmly committed to Jesus is choosing not to walk away in pain or in doubt or when you are worried that he has completely forgotten you. Are you resolved in your commitment to Jesus, or is it up for grabs? It's a real deal breaker moment. Are you up for committing to Jesus and following him through every kind of dip and turn? Or are you just really committed when it's going well? And any other time, it's up for grabs. Being firmly committed to Jesus means that the rest of our life pivots from that commitment. That votes first. One of the instructions of God, or of following God, is what has to do with what we do with our money. And so we believe here at the Vineyard that God has called us to give a portion of our income back to God. This is a demonstration or a reminder that to God and to us that our money first belongs to him. Okay? And so we give a tithe, a regular portion of our income. I got to look at this real quick. Sorry. And it's also a way for us to support the work that God does in and through the church and to serve the practical needs of people around us. I know this, I teach this, I believe this, and every time I write my tithe, it hurts. I have some feelings, if you will. Okay? So, since the beginning of my adult life, I have always given a portion of my income to God. This was even pre-pastor days, okay? I've just always done that. In fact, it is the first line on our monthly budget. But true story, up until a couple of years ago, it would be the last line to get paid. Okay? So here's how I worked. I decided that I kind of lived this way. And my way was that I knew that that money was there, but I wasn't going to pay it to God, which is interesting to use the word pay versus give. But I saw it as paying. So I wasn't going to pay it until I was sure that, no unexpected emergencies came up that month, or we didn't need it, or, you know, we didn't eat out too much that month. Okay? It was like my buffer. And then if the month settled nicely, I would then pay God. And a couple of years ago, I'm like doing our money and organizing things, and I hear God very clearly and very softly say, "Give me mine first." And I was like, "Come again?" Like, that is a terrible thing to hear when you're doing your money. And I felt God say really clearly, "Give me mine first." And I realized that my way, that by not giving God this money first, I was holding out. I was self-protecting. I was waiting. I was just kind of making sure that everything settled in a nice place until I gave him what I was going to give him. And so we did a little experiment. For 1 year, we gave God our tithe first. It was a practical way that God was asking for me to be resolved, to be fully committed, not to wait and see how things shook out by the end of the month, but to give him what was his first, so that before kind of the windfall of the month happened, that part of our lives was anchored. It reordered how I thought about money. It reordered how I interact with money. And you know what? There are some months where things come up. There are some months where there is an emergency. There are some months where we simply just eat out too much. And we make those adjustments as we go along. But by giving God my tithe first, it was a way of putting the stake in the ground that I'm fully committed to God, even when it comes to my money. Are you resolved? Are you fully committed to Jesus in all the weird little nooks and crannies in your life? This was a part of Daniel's formation. He was getting this in order with his food. arguably, you could argue this is kind of a seemingly insignificant detail, but he knew that it was important enough and was a part of God's instruction, so he was resolved to see it through. Is there any part of your life that needs to get to a place of fully resolved? That it would reflect your fully committed life to God? Several years later, then, the king has a dream. And he has a dream, and no one can interpret it. And the king was so angry and so furious that none of the wise men in the kingdom could interpret this dream. And so he, just comes up with this idea to kill all of them. Like, well, none of you are good to me, so I'm just going to kill all of you. Which, there's a way to deal with it. But that's what he was choosing. Okay? And now Daniel fell in the wise man category, and he hears about this order, which will effectively end his life. And he goes to the king and he says, "Can I please have more time? I would like to interpret your dream, but I need a little bit more time." And he's granted more time. And then this is what happens. Daniel chapter 2, 17 through 19. Then Daniel returns to his house, explains the matter to his friends, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, and he urges them to plead for mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that he and his friends might not be executed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. And during the night, the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision, and then Daniel praised the God of heaven. Fun fact, these guys, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, are actually Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. What? You see how this is all connected? That's kind of cool. So he rushes home and he says to his friends, "I need you to plead for mercy as fast as you can, because if not, we're done." And then through the night, God reveals the mystery of the vision, and Daniel wakes up and he praises the God of heaven. Daniel was committed to God. He was committed to following God and his instruction, even when it forced him to work for the bad guys. And still, Daniel relied on God. That's kind of remarkable. If we're going to intentionally follow God and his instruction, we have to rely on him in the process. Now, this can be a little fuzzy, so hang in there with me. Daniel was gifted with wisdom and knowledge. He was really good at this stuff. So he could have gone to the king and said, "Tell me your dream. I'll take a crack at it. Worth the risk of possibly not dying." But he doesn't. He goes home, he asks his friends to pray for him, and then he waits for God to reveal the mystery at night. Daniel relied on God in real time. Daniel asked God for mercy and wisdom, and then he listened, he paid attention, he responded to God and what he was saying. Often, we try to follow Jesus without Jesus. That's really complicated. Jesus did not say, "Head that way, I'll meet you at the finish line." Jesus says, "Follow me, let's do this together." But so very often, in the pursuit of following Jesus and following his instruction, we go at it without him. That's like showing up on that ridiculous old, the phone a friend? Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? That's like showing up on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire and saying, "Take away all my phone a friends. I know everything." And then all of us at home are like, "Well, you're going to lose." Don't take away the phone-a-friend that Jesus has offered to you. Why make this hard thing harder? This is really challenging. Following God and living out his instruction is no joke. Take the phone-a-friend. Let God help you through it. Let God walk with you. This thing is designed so that in the process, you get to understand who God is. So that in following him, you get to know him. In following his instruction, you get to know his character. That's the point of this. Without this, this is just a whole bunch of rules and instruction. Don't let your life be centered around rules and instruction. Let it be centered around relationship. That's the point. Relationship, relationship, relationship. A couple of months ago, I was stuck in a situation. I didn't know what to do about it. It was confusing. I'd never been in a situation like this before. I was just stuck, and I felt like I needed some real clarity and strategy that I didn't have, like, in my pockets. So I texted my friends and said, can you please pray for me? I need some strategy. I don't know what to do in this situation. And I just kept worrying, kept planning, kept thinking through all the possible scenarios about how this could play out, what I could do, what the other person might be able to do. How can we sort this out? And one day I'm washing dishes and I felt like God said to me, because I hear God when I wash dishes. So I felt like God said to me, are you going to ask me what I think? And I'm kind of snarky by nature. So I said something like, yeah, I texted everybody to pray for me. Totally sincerely. Like as if he were going to download the information into my brain and then I would just be able to use it. And I felt like God said, are you going to ask me what you should do? Are you going to ask me for help? Are you going to ask me to sit in this conversation with you? Are you going to ask me my ideas? And I realized that I was going about this thing completely disconnected from the person I was following. If we are going to intentionally live with God and follow his instruction, we have to rely on him in the process. Daniel got that. Maybe he had had enough experience of God literally saving his life from these crazy people that he was in community with. But Daniel knew he did not want to walk into the court of that king alone. He wanted to do it with God. He wanted to do it with God's particular wisdom in that moment for that dream. And so he went and connected with God first. To rely on God is to live a connected life with God, to talk to God, to listen to God, to expect God to provide for you, and then to wait and see what God does. Daniel's formation happened each time Daniel chose God and God showed up. Daniel chose God and God showed up. Daniel chose God in front of food and God showed up in providing wisdom and mercy and knowledge. Daniel chose to seek God when there was no possible answer for this dream and vision, and God showed up by revealing the mystery to Daniel. This was the assembly of Daniel's all-in life. 50 years before he ever got to the lion's den. And in every move of Daniel's formation, Daniel learned that God is who he says he is, and he's worth trusting. As we let God assemble our lives formationally, the thing we will learn is that God is who he says he is and he's worth trusting. Daniel's life didn't happen through magical, buckets of grit and willpower. Daniel's life happened because he allowed God to formationally put it together. It's the same thing that's offered to you and I. If we're going to follow Jesus, we get to do it with him. One of my most favorite things about this story is that when Daniel comes out of the lion's den, King Darius, the one who put him in the lion's den, says this: "The God of Daniel is to be honored, for he is the living God, and he endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and saves. He performs signs and wonders, and in the heavens and on the earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions." What King Darius could say in that moment was something that Daniel learned 50 years prior. He's the living God who endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders on heaven and on earth. The lion's den is just one extraordinarily dramatic scene that we tell a lot. And so the band can come back up. My question for us this morning is, are we allowing God to formationally assemble us so that we can go all in? Are we allowing ourselves to be assembled formationally so that we can follow God and his instruction? God led Daniel through each of those formational moments. He was the one doing the inviting. He was the one who showed up. God invites us into each formational moment. He's the one who invites us, and then he's the one who shows up. So we're going to sing one last song together, and we're going to sing that last, chunk that, that last part that we sang before we sat down. Can you put the words up, Katie? "I will build my life upon your love. It's my firm foundation. I will put my trust in you alone, and I will not be shaken." That is a chorus of people who are resolved and who rely on God. Are you resolved? Are you relying on him in every weird little dimension of your life? That's what God wants. That's what God offers to you. And so we get to respond to that invitation. So will you stand with us and sing this one last part together?